Phil Hendry.
Well, good evening. Welcome to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We're here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. We are a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch, and we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. But that's just the preliminary. That's just the disclaimer. We are a show in constant evolution, constant metamorphosis, and this is a radio show. What were you saying the other day, Bud?
Yeah, Bud, are we political anymore?
Sure we're political. Sure we are.
Well, I don't think so.
Well, sure we're political. It's just that we are political our own way. We're political with a small p instead of a capital P, and I don't know, you know, we're going to start talking about presidential politics as it relates to the things that we care about. Like, for instance, had there been a decree on soft drinks coming from the White House, that might have been, can you imagine, New York, by the way, I just heard that Mayor Bloomberg is not going to raise taxes given the difficulty people are having with Hurricane Sandy, so that's cool of him. And I'm not even a guy against taxes. I think that taxes are probably necessary. I don't know, you know.
What are you talking about?
Taxes are necessary, man. You got to have taxes.
Yeah, but there's, what do you mean? You got, that's very dangerous territory.
Oh, God, here we go. Do you understand what he's saying?
Let me do it, okay? Hey, Bud, you see these roads out here and all that stuff?
No, I know about a road. I know about that, that they got to build that.
Yeah, what else do you think is, everything else is built by who?
Well, we do.
Yes, we do, with our taxes. With our taxes.
Government can't do anything right. Everybody know that.
Oh, the government can't do it. Have you ever heard of the moon landing?
Oh, hold on. Maybe the government can't do a lot of things right. You're absolutely right, Robert. The government cannot do a lot of things right. The government butchers a lot of stuff up. But every now and again, the government gets things right, like wars. Let's call that. Do you want to rely on private enterprise for winning a war? Would you like to say, well, there's a war now. We're taking bids from whoever and whatever. And let's see what we get, huh?
What do you mean? They couldn't do that.
You sure they could? They could contract with a bunch of mercenaries. It depends. And I'll tell you something. It's getting that way.
Oh, you've got to be. You're high on a mixture of mushrooms. My God.
No, how do you figure? Listen to me, Margaret. The way that wars are being fought now, and I say this, I'm not trying to be cavalier, and I'm not just chit-chatting here as if it's gossip time. I'm saying, just this amateur, this civilian here, looking at the picture, looking at the big picture of the military and what the military does, the way that wars are being fought now, the way you hear the military experts talk about it, it's all getting smaller. By that, I don't mean that the wars are going to be less deadly, but there are fewer soldiers and there's more technology. Now, I know that that can be dangerous because that's exactly what happened during the Carter era on up to 9/11 with our intelligence community. We went, we went with fewer soldiers, more or less, and more technology. We had fewer and fewer people, as they say, on the ground, boots on the ground, you know.
What's that mean, anyway, boots on the ground? When people have their ear down on the ground.
No, it's not their ear on the ground. Boots on the ground is a figment of your, not figment of your imagination, it's a figment of your speech.
No, it's a figure of speech.
Well, what's a figment?
An imaginary thing.
I don't.
Anyway, boots on the ground represents just people that are actual human beings that are there. So during the years between the Carter administration, and I'm blaming President Carter mostly because it began the disassembling, if you will, of the CIA and all of the nasty stuff that the CIA knew how to do, like kill people and, start revolutions. All of that stuff sort of got de-escalated. And it became more of a technologic thing. Lots and lots of spy satellites, lots and lots of bugging, lots and lots of bugging of embassies, and this kind of nonsense. Screwing around with fax machines. Oh, yeah.
What do you mean screwing around with fax machines?
Well, what they did was, I saw a thing here recently where the United States, we did this to the Russian embassy. And that's the kind of fun thing that happens, you know, with espionage and counterintelligence and intelligence. The American people say they want to know, and we are a democratic people, and ultimately, if we want to know something, we're going to know it. That's just our... I don't think we understand the power we have. Americans think that they're so out of control. There's just nothing we can do. No.
Yeah, but the government want to keep it from you. They can.
No. If we want to find out something, we will, okay? And I personally, I think there ain't a whole hell of a lot we don't know. people make me laugh, and you've heard other people say this, you know, talking about America keeping secrets, like where are the UFO men hidden? Where are the Martians hidden? We couldn't keep a secret for love or money around here. Are you crazy? Every time you turn around, there's some guy. Look at this guy, this some little midget from the Army, this little Bradley Cooper twerp. This jackball is pumping out all kinds of stuff to everybody. He's sending out stuff to that, what's his name, that Assange?
What are you talking about? Talk about that. Yeah, that's the WikiLeaks guy.
Oh, that guy. You know, he's interesting. I think he's very fascinating as a man, you know.
As a man.
I think any woman is fascinated by a man that takes those kinds of risks.
Have you seen a guy? He's about 5'2", you know, eyes of blue. Right.
5'2", eyes of blue.
But there was a song about that.
Has anybody seen my gal? That's the song.
Is that about him? No, you jackass, a song about a girl. Well, what, you all into guys now or something?
No.
Oh, will you shut up? 5'2", eyes of blue. This guy is a private in the U.S. Army, some jive-ass kid that got his hands on tons and tons, reams and reams of stuff, and started spitting it out to this guy at WikiLeaks, and the next thing you know, it's all over the planet Earth. Thank God there wasn't anything of any substance. Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that want you to believe that there was. The bottom line on all of this was that the government of the United States, the American people themselves, their State Department, their government, the documents that are being used by their government, the secrets that we all have as a society, these things are being spilled out there. And I can't believe people are just nefarious in the way that they deal with these things. People were saying things like, oh, so Obama's keeping secrets, huh? Obama? Look, he's the president of the United States. What are you going to say if Obama doesn't enforce the law?
What do you mean?
I'm saying that when Obama went after this guy, Bradley Manning, as well he should, as the state, as the attorney general did, as well he should, as the law enforcement arm of the government did, as well it should, you got these dumbasses out there saying that Obama was some kind of a backstabber to the progressive cause. So what you're asking now is for Obama to do what Nixon did, which is basically just break the law in the interest of politics. Is that it? How stupid can you be? I don't even think these people think these things through. They think that, oh, well, he can prosecute what he wants. No, he cannot prosecute what he can't prosecute what he wants and stay president of the United States. He can't prosecute what he wants and stay out of jail.
Yeah, but Nixon did.
Nixon did. Nixon got a pardon from Gerald Ford. You're right. He got pardoned. It was a call that Gerald Ford made. A lot of people agreed with it, and I got news for you. A lot of people didn't agree with it, but guess what? At the end of the day, it didn't much matter to anybody. They just wanted Nixon's ass out of there, and it was fine. If anybody had a real sweat with that presidential pardon, man, they would have made a huge stink about it. But Nixon had his ass kicked up one side and down the next. Don't worry about it. Now you come along with Obama, and he's supposed to do what? He's supposed to say, yeah, all you fine progressive folks out there, anti-military industrial establishment types, you're right, this is so fantastic. Julian Assange or Assange or whatever his name is, I could care less. And I always love it when people give me an email later on.
Well, you should pronounce the man's name right. I think it's a little bit of an insult, Phil. What if they called you Mr. Hendry or something like that?
I guess sooner or later they're going to correct it. You know, I'm not going to. You think I'm going to write the guy a letter?
Yeah, well,
will you quit hitting the microphone, bud?
Yeah, you wouldn't write him a letter and say, excuse me, my name is pronounced like this?
Like I ain't got bigger fish to fry at that particular time.
What's that mean, bigger fish to fry?
Like I got better things to do than worry about how some guy is pronouncing my name. So anyway, the bottom line is this. The military is smaller, and the military is using more technology, and the military is more, they're all about pinpointing and taking out certain key installations, certain key areas of government and military control. It isn't about just wiping out tons and tons of men. It's about destroying the assets of a country's military, yes. And more those assets are not men. They are airplanes, tanks, you know, means of communication, means of transportation, etc., food, and so forth. And you can probably do that with a mercenary army of 10,000 or 20,000.
My God Almighty. So you're saying that America has in the future to depend on the dogs of war.
What do you mean?
You've never heard Shakespeare.
Oh, come on, Mark.
Hold on now. Have you ever heard Shakespeare, bud? Well, I know the answer to that.
Wait, Shakespeare? Yeah, I have. To be or not to be.
Good, good boy. The dogs of war. The line, I believe, is, let fly the dogs of war, isn't it, Phil?
No, I don't know, but I know it's not that.
Oh, well, okay, Sir Laurence Olivier.
Well, Margaret, if you're going to say it and then you don't know it, I think it's something like let loose the dogs of... cry havoc and let loose the dogs of war.
Yes, I was just about to say that.
No, you weren't. Mr. Henry said it.
He doesn't know Shakespeare from a... he doesn't know Shakespeare from a skid mark. And
thank you very much, Margaret. We're going to take a break here. Are you going to have to go to the toilet?
Oh, my God, what are you nervous about? Are you going to... no, I don't have to go to the toilet.
Hi, I'm Phil Henry. I don't know Shakespeare from a skid mark. We'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. News coming up on a horrific incident in Wyoming. We also have the results of that, well, just for me. I'm just going to read out loud something that only interests me, the UCLA-Stanford game. We'll be right, and Rihanna apparently has a big rock and showed up bottomless someplace. My house. I'm joking. Well, if, no, I'm serious. We'll be right back, Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our
that,
bitch.
What did that mean?
The Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry? That's bitching.
What did all of that mean?
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here on Friday night on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. But just, you know, the world continues. Here is a story of a man wielding a sharp-edged weapon, killing a woman in a Casper neighborhood before slaying a male teacher and taking his own life in front of students in a community college classroom. It caused a campus-wide lockdown as authorities tried to piece together what happened. He killed this guy with a knife, I guess, in front of his, in front of this man's students. Police found the suspect and teacher found the suspect and the teacher dead at a science building on the Casper College campus, which was locked down for about 2 hours, according to police and school officials. The other victim was found in a street 2 miles away. This was a woman that was killed. And then 2 miles later, into this college campus goes this individual and kills this teacher. Police Chief Chris Walsh said investigators were still trying to determine a motive. The attacker wasn't believed to be a Casper College student. It appeared he knew the victims. No names were released. Walsh said an edged weapon was used in at least one of the killings, but it was unclear if the same weapon was used in all the deaths. The attack at the two-year community college in Casper, about 250 miles northwest of Denver, occurred before 9 a.m. in a class with students present on the science building's third floor.
What is the point of reading this? That's what I want to know.
Just got to talk about a news.
It's. I'll tell you why I'm reading it. It isn't just because it's news, because it's not even really news anymore. It's not news. There's no defining what news is. What's important and what is interesting. That's what. And I really highly doubt that this stuff is all that fascinating to people because it's become so commonplace that we now take it as a matter of daily life. That there is happiness, there is sadness, there are children, there are families, there's school, there's love. There's all kind, and then there's also random violence, killing, and mayhem. So that's a part now, it would seem, not of normal life, but of what we think is normal life.
What's that supposed to mean?
Oh, here we go. Why don't you speak English? What do you mean, what we think is normal life?
Margaret, there's the way it is, and then there's the way we think it is, okay?
Yeah, there's the way it is, the way I want it to be, too.
What has that got to do with anything?
Yeah.
What did that mean?
My dad used to say it. There's the way it is and the way that I want it.
That's him telling you to clean your room up or something, man. That's not what I'm talking about here.
There's the my way and then a highway.
Yeah, my dad said that too.
Oh, well, isn't that just nice? My way or the highway? I ain't talking about that. I'm talking about the way life is and the way we think it is. There is a certain reality, and then there's the reality that we live in, and we think that's the reality, and that's the problem with the human race. That's the problem with each and every one of us. We got what is, and we have what we think is, and generally, not always, generally, what we think is not what the way it is, and that's where we get into trouble.
Well, now, what, for instance, how does that apply to this?
Well, this is a... what I'm trying to tell you is this.
What are those students in that classroom supposed to think?
This is not... listen to me. Is the reality that there is mayhem, violence, death, and destruction on every corner? No. Is the reality is that there is a guy stabbing and killing somebody on every block, every minute of the day? No. What is the reality? The reality is most likely something along these lines, that several instances across the United States, just take our country, for example, during each day, there are several instances of someone violently attacking another human being. Several, if not, I would put it into, I don't know how many. It depends on what you call a violent attack, you know.
Probably millions.
Yeah, you got to say there's millions.
What do you mean millions? What do you mean millions? There's 200 and 300 million people in the United States, 350 million people in the United States.
How many? You just went from 250 to 350. That changes the odds.
No, will you just give me a break here? How many times a day? Millions? No, we don't have millions of our people going nuts. We've got probably in this country, I would say, all right, I'll top it out at 1,000. Maybe 1,000 times a day, someone violently attacks another human being. And I'm not talking about a schoolyard fight. I mean a all-out, life-threatening attack. It could be with fists. It could be with knives. Maybe it's with guns. Beyond the scope of cops or military, I'm talking about just private citizens engaging each other violently in what could be a life and death struggle. Probably close to maybe per day in America, 1,000 instances of that. And they're handled by the local police, and the person is arrested or not. Sometimes they never know what the hell happened. Guy just walks around, you know, he's all bloody, and he tells the cops, and the cops will look for him, and they can't find him, whatever. Or both parties separate, and nobody is reporting it.
What about if they kill each other?
I'm not talking about murder. I'm not talking about murder. I'm talking about just how many times during the course of a day people violently engage each other in just America, just this country, that is a that could wind up in death. And I'm saying that maybe 1,000 tops. That's hardly what I would call the reality norm. I still say that that's an aberration. In the lifetimes of millions of people, 1,000 a day is very rare. And yet, those make their way into the newspaper more readily than anything else. People have always bitched about this. They always said, how come there's no good news? Why is there only the bad?
Well, Phil, I've worked in journalism, and I know how important these stories are. You take a knife, and you slash, or you do what you do with a knife, and I'm going to put that on the front page.
What about a guy carving a turkey? Yeah, give me five. Yeah.
Get out of here, will you, with the five?
I'm not talking about carving a turkey, you dumb boy. I'm talking about what Phil said, violently attacking another person.
And you're going to put that on the front page if it's like a knife fight outside of a bar somewhere where no one dies? It's just...
I think it's shocking.
It's shocking to you, it's shocking to me. But what's the reality? That's what I'm trying to get to here. If I saw a knife fight, I would be, you know, wow. But is that the daily norm? Is that what I see every day in my life? No, that would be an aberration. That's an aberration for most people. So... when we see a story like this, what's the first thing we think? We don't think it's an aberration. We think, oh, my God, look at what's happening to our country. My God, on every street corner, there's someone with a knife. See?
Not really, but I know probably most people understand what you're saying, but I don't.
Yeah, me neither.
I don't get it either.
All right, great, perfect. Then I'm doing my job. The attack at the two-year community college about 250 miles northwest of Denver occurred at 9 a.m. The college sent out a campus-wide alert. Political science instructor Chris Heinrichsen said he was showing the film Frost Nixon to his Wyoming and U.S. government class when he stepped into the hall to get something for a student and was told a homicide had occurred on campus. He went back into the classroom where students were getting messages about the campus lockdown on their phones. We locked the door and waited for further instruction, Heinrichsen said. I wonder if that's a good idea after what happened at Columbine. Well, I shouldn't second guess. Wouldn't you want to just, like, in a mad stampede run?
No, that is what they don't want you to do.
Yeah, you don't want to be crazy.
Well, no, I know, but wouldn't you want to? In other words, if I'm standing there in the classroom and a homicide is committed on campus and they're going to lock me in, I think I'd just start to wet myself. I'd probably...
I'm sure. What are you going to do? Start to cry and everything?
Yeah, you'd probably go, help.
Well, I'm being honest. I'm not going to cry, but I'd probably say, let me take my chances running outside into the wide open spaces. If there is a sniper out there and sees me and he drops me, oh well, but...
Phil, you're a rare bird. You make a lot of sense some days, and other days,
I'm an idiot.
Yes, like today.
All right, well, today's one of those idiot days, folks. We'll be right back. Phil Henry Show.
What a jackpot. Get him going out and doing that. Okay.
Phil Henry.
Don't demand to see anything. What are you talking about, you demand to see?
I want to see what you... Let me have...
Excuse me, Margaret. I'll show it to the audience if you want me to, but don't say...
I don't like... Secretive actions bother me. I don't like this whole furtive thing.
I posterized a picture of a friend's dog. I took it... I've got an app. I really have this great app on my iPhone. It's called Photogene, and you can do a lot of different things with the photo. And what I did was I posterized it. And it's a picture of my friend's dog. As a matter of fact, I got it on the homepage. You got to steal my phone. You can look at it on the homepage.
Yeah, we do. I'm grabbing his phone. But look on the homepage.
Would you get near a microphone, you...
Bud, she's right. Here, I'll show it to everybody at home who may be watching. Or actually, people that are maybe watching on Phil TV. But basically what I did was I took just a picture of the dog and I posterized it and sent it back. There he is. His name's Toby. And the actual photograph...
Oh, isn't he adorable? Is that a Shih Tzu?
It is.
You said a dirty word.
No, she did not. That's the name of the dog. Okay? I don't want you saying it, because I know what you're going to do with it.
What did the dog call him?
Yeah, tell him again what the dog's called.
Okay, then I'm not going to say it.
It's a Shih Tzu. It's a Chinese dog.
Bud, I'm going to belt you so hard, man, you'll never wake up. They're actually... These dogs are among the oldest... domesticated dogs. In fact, this breed is the single oldest domesticated breed on Earth. It really is. It was one of the oldest domesticated. The Shih Tzu is very closely related, as small as it is, and as non-wolf-like as it looks. It is very closely related to the wolf, which was the original dog, the a female wolf. And the Shih Tzu was bred for no other reason than to simply keep the empress... and the royalty of China company. He had no purpose. And yet today, if you see these little dogs, I like them. I mean, they're little tiny. And this guy here, Toby, he's a tiny guy. He's only a year old, but he's still like he's a little tiny puppy. But these dogs react kind of the way Chihuahua, they've got a better disposition. I shouldn't say better disposition, but they've got a domestic kind of quality. You know, Chihuahuas were bred to kill vermin and to kill rats, to do stuff that you couldn't get a cat to do, because the dog will do it, because the dog is like a good worker, and a cat is a lazy slob, and, you know.
Yeah, a cat only work when it feels like working, and then and only then, if you give it a fat fish.
Yeah, cats are always looking to get paid first.
There you go. Cats are like the average worker that wants to get paid before they do the job, yeah? You want me to get a rat? Well, let's see it, baby. Let's see the fish.
I don't know. I think cats are far more reliable at trapping vermin than dogs. Dogs always want to be petted, and, you know.
Well, in any, I don't want to get into a whole conversation about this. Anyway, the Shih Tzu is it's a great dog. They are good at that kind of, you know, keeping, you know, track of all kinds of crazy crap that comes in the house. And, you know, anyway, that's what I did. Grab the phone from me.
Well, you're doing all of this secret stuff.
I ain't doing anything secret. 877-876-7445 here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We're going to go to Robert Green, who is the owner and operator of Fraser Foods, of course, in Buena Park, California. Now, the interesting, I think, conversation that has just been spawned here has to do, Bob, with the idea of guns and you know, once again, guns and toy guns and how we react.
You know, Phil, I don't think it's so much toy guns as I think it is the reaction of guns. Should we have guns? Should we not have guns? This conversation is constantly had in our society. When you own a store, when you own a business that the public comes into all the time, you're certainly mindful of the security of the people in your store.
Okay, but as we were talking about this Wyoming story, off the air we started talking about, once again, the conversation that is going to be had about guns.
Yeah, and this is a conversation that is ongoing in our country, and it seems that the solution among some parents is just to never, ever even bring up the subject of guns. Don't have any guns in the house. Don't allow any member of the family to get comfortable with guns, and the problem will somehow solve itself. And I don't think that that's the I don't think that's an intelligent way of doing things. As the owner of a grocery store, one of the things that I see a lot of are little kids coming into the store with their parents, and they have their toys. And I see this every day. I see children with their mothers. They have a car, or they have a toy of some kind. And a lot of times they'll have these guns.
Now, who are the mothers that don't want the guns?
Well, we have a younger generation of mother now. I don't know what you want to call them, the Generation X mom or younger baby boomer moms. I don't know. But these mothers believe that the best way to wean our society, or at least the best way to protect their children and have their children be constructive and contributing members of society, is to not let their kids anywhere near a gun, do not acknowledge the existence of guns, and certainly do not give them any gun training. I think it's dangerous, and I think it starts early.
All right, so you are opposed to that point of view, and I would be too. I think that guns are a tool, you know.
Well, yeah, exactly. They're a tool like any other tool. They can be used for good, they can be used for bad, but there's an opportunity here. When we see, for instance, what I see, and I think there are a lot of business owners and shop owners across this country have this opportunity. When I see a mother or a child come into our store and the little boy has a gun, a plastic gun, and sometimes you see that, and what the little boy is often doing is he's aiming at people and going, pow, 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 as a little kid will do. You know, like anybody, I think it used to unnerve me a little bit to have a kid no older than 3 or 4 pointing a weapon at me. But in recent years, I've grown to understand that this can be an educational moment for society, not just for the child. Because what that child is doing, a little 4 or 5-year-old boy with a gun, is he is showing the people around him what it might look like to just have a weapon randomly pointed at you, and what is going to be your reaction. And from my part, I've practiced what my reaction will be because I think it's good for the kid. So that if you have a child that is pointing a gun randomly in a store, even though it's a plastic gun, and even though it's a toy gun, someday that child may be holding the real thing, and he may be in a situation where he is no longer able to cope with life, that he has reached the end of his rope, that he's walked into a market, maybe my market, and he's no longer with his mother, he's 20 years older, and that gun's loaded, and it's real. So that kid has to be taught now.
So you're talking about a little boy with a toy gun. What if he grows up and becomes a real spree killer?
I'm talking not only about what if he grows up and becomes a real spree killer, but even if he doesn't, what would you do? What would be your reaction to some punk, and I don't mean the little kid's a punk, but that kid grows up to become a man. And in some instances, he may grow up to become that lousy punk that has a gun. I don't know. I wouldn't want to judge. But what do I do? And what I do in my store is when I see a little boy point a gun at me and go, bang, bang, I make the finger guns, as we do. We turn our hands into 2 finger guns, 2 guns, and I go pow, 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 as if I've got a...
Like you got a 2-gun rig or something.
Yeah, a 2-gun holster. And I shoot back at him going pow, 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 pow. The mother sees this, and it looks like I'm playing. But as I walk by that boy, and this is very important, as I walk by that boy, I will lean down and whisper to him, you are a dead man. Now, I know that that sounds like a very harsh...
That you know, it does.
My God, you're talking to a little boy, Bob.
No, I know I'm talking to a little boy. And I've only said 2 things. I've said 3 words. I've said, you're a dead man, and that's all I say. What have I just done? I've shown the little boy that I will shoot back, and I will shoot until he's dead. So that if he ever gets the bright idea later on in his life that he's going to walk into a store and start firing at people, he may be fired back upon, and he's a dead man.
Now, let me ask you something. You're not a sociologist or anything.
No, I'm not, Phil. I'm just a businessman.
All right. You're not a sociologist. You're not a cop or anything. You're not a psychologist. What do you base your beliefs on
let me tell you.
Well, hold on. So I can roll this back out for the audience. That if a little boy, a little kid that we've seen millions of times with his little toy plastic gun comes into the store and he's aiming and he's shooting at people. You often see little boys, they have two hands on the gun.
Oh, they're very small, and to them it's just a toy.
Yeah. You see this as a potentially bad bit of training.
Yeah, I see that as a piece of bad behavior, unless you are able to counter it with something.
So even if it's a little boy with this toy gun, you think that has to be counteracted?
I believe so. Because, again, in his mind, look at this, a gun. I can just shoot it anywhere I want. And anybody I want, at anybody I want, and nothing happens. Well, I'm there as a store owner, and I think we all should do this. You know, you fire back at the kid in a playful way. In my way, I bring out two guns because I want the kid to know that at the end of the day, he's not walking out of my store. I mean, there'll be a corner walking in. There'll be a body bag going in. There might even be a puddle of blood, but he's on the 5 o'clock news as just two legs and a pair of shoes coming out from behind.
I don't like this.
You know, Bob.
No. He's on the nightly news as just two shoes and two legs sticking out from behind a counter. And there's yellow police tape. Now that's how much fun it is, kid.
But that little boy is not going to be able to think of that, okay?
That's my point. You're teaching a very adult lesson to a child.
You know what? There's an old saying, Miss Gray. I don't care if he did it, he got it.
Well, that's not an old saying. That's something from my childhood that I brought on the show one day.
Well, that might have been where I heard it, but I like it. I don't care if he did it, he got it.
All right, we're going to come back with Robert Green, our number 877-876-PHIL, as we talk about the random violence, gun violence in our society. Is it all about getting rid of the guns, or is it about retraining the thought process, not just of the young person, but of the people around? How do you react when you see a little boy with a toy gun pointed at you and go bang, bang, bang? Do you shoot back with your fingers? Bob Green says that's exactly what you should do. 877-876-PHIL, the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Don't do it the way I do it.
What do you mean?
Well, don't copy my two-gun rig. I mean, do your own.
Phil, world famous Phil Hendry Show, talking here with Robert Green from Fraser Foods. Fraser Foods is a large grocery chain, I should let people know, in the Southwest. And you guys have been around for a while, Bob, huh?
1982.
We're talking about this situation in Wyoming, in Casper, Wyoming, where a man with a knife, he had a knife, it wasn't a gun. Does that matter?
I don't think it matters. I think what we're talking about is this random violence that does occur.
And can I say something, Phil?
Go ahead.
I think you pointed out that it's a knife, and I think that that's wrong because, I don't think it's wrong, but I think you're taking, as Bob just said, the goal for many of us, and it may not be your goal, Phil, and it might not be your goal, Bob, is to get rid of guns. And so you bringing up the fact that this man used a knife, I think, is unfair. It hurts our ability to spread the word on guns.
Well, wait a minute. I mean, don't you want me to report this the right way?
I want you to report it. I just think you need to keep it about guns.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with that. What I want to say is this. I believe in guns.
I do not believe in guns.
Okay. You both want to talk about guns. One of you supports them. The other one doesn't.
Phil, I support gun ownership.
No, I know that, Mr. Green. I do not.
Hold on, hold on. One of you supports it, one of you doesn't. But the case that we're talking about here in Wyoming doesn't have anything to do with guns. It has to do with knives.
There you go again.
Yeah, Phil, I think you need to keep the focus on guns for the purposes of why I came on the show, and I guess for the purposes of what your co-panelist here, Ms. Gray, what she wants to talk about. So let's forget about the guy using a knife, because it doesn't do me any good. It's not doing her any good, not that I care.
Well, thank you very much. That's a little rude.
Well, I don't really care whether it does you any good, but it's not doing me any good.
Wait a minute. This is bizarre. You know, a lot of the anti-gun people point to gun violence. This was not gun violence. It was knife violence. All right? And it was two people were killed with this knife. So shouldn't we be talking about getting rid of knives?
Well, we should not be talking about getting rid of knives, because that's not why I came on your show.
Yes, but he is the host of the show. But I agree with you, Bob, in this instance, that we should not be talking about knives. We should be talking about guns.
Margaret, you want to talk about guns, even if it was a slingshot, because it's all about guns.
Yeah, it's all about guns for me, too.
Well, what if we're... This has got... Never mind. Let's get back to it, you know.
Phil, you agreed to have Mr. Green on the program.
Yeah, that's true, Mr. Green. You said to have him on. You knew about guns.
You did know it was going to be about guns, Phil. You doing a flip-flop now. See, this is what the politicians do. They do the flippity-flop. You know about that, Phil? How do you do a flip-flop?
Yeah, I know about the flip-flop. God, big deal.
Well... Yeah, that's if you know about it, why are you doing it?
Yeah, so they talk about politician flip-flop.
I agree. I think it is not... You don't want to do the flip-flop.
And you guys knock it off with the flip-flop. I'm not doing any flip-flop. I'm talking about, with Bob Green, gun violence. Okay, Bob, so now what you've done is you have fired back at the kid. Okay, Margaret, do you mind if Margaret gets in on this, or...
What does this turn into, some kind of a debate? My understanding was I was going to be on the program, and I was going to talk about this the way I wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, but you got to debate the people.
I just heard something in the background. It sounded like a pipe, water going through a pipe.
That's Bud Dickman.
That wasn't water going through a pipe. It was Bud Dickman.
That's a guy on the radio, sir. You have to answer all the questions and be... And
yeah, I'd like you to answer my questions.
All right. What question do you want me to answer?
I don't believe in guns. You do. You believe that gun ownership will become more responsible as we teach children the consequences of being criminals.
Random criminals?
You mean criminals?
I'm sorry, yes, criminals.
Yes, I believe that if a little boy in a supermarket has the audacity to point, even if it's a toy gun, to point a toy gun at me and go bang, bang, like it's no big thing shooting a human being, then I believe the way to react to that is to use your fingers as two finger guns, as if you pulled them out of a two-gun rig, as Phil just said. And for those of you that don't know what a two-gun rig is, it is the holster with two holsters.
Yeah, they used it on a Wild West show and stuff.
Well, they're not on the Wild West. I mean, they used to do it in the days of the West. I don't know. I forget the guy, Wyatt Burp. That's not his name, is it?
Wyatt Earp.
Correct, Wyatt Earp. And I know that a lot of that stuff is phony.
Yeah, a lot of that is legend. Could you get to the point?
I am getting to the point, ma'am, if you don't mind. I am getting to the point. So you fire back at the little boy with the two-gun rig, is what I'm saying.
And the effect on this little boy is what?
After, you got to hold on for a minute, Phil. You fire on the kid, you go bang, 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 and then you walk by the kid, and you want to make sure the mother doesn't hear this. And the reason is very simple. She will not understand the psychological impact. You simply walk by the kid, and you say, you're a dead man. Now, are you trying to hurt that kid? No. You are trying to send a message to that kid that if he pulls a gun on you, then he's going out of that store, out of that candy store, out of that toy, wherever. He's going out feet first.
I think that is...
Bob, you're talking about a little boy.
Would you... I really wish you would listen to me. I'm not talking about a little boy now. I'm putting into his mind the psychological seed, the informational seed, the introject, if you will, of what he should be thinking as an adult.
Well, you said he's going out of that toy store, out of that candy store.
Because now he's a little boy, but you want him to think. geez, if I ever did this for real, with a real gun, I'm going out feet first in all areas. The last thing I see is a whole lot of yellow tape.
Again, I don't know if that's the way to deal with a child. I think I'm a mother, Mr. Green.
Well, I've been a father, and I had two small children, and I know that a lot of things scare a child, but a lot of things can be put into perspective for a child.
How did you teach your kids about guns?
Well, we had weapons in the house, Bill, and we had a lot of weapons in the house, and I was in the National Guard. I was not Army or anything like that, but I did do my duty in the National Guard, and we had long guns and we had handguns. We had 22s, I had a 38, and I took my kids out to the range, and we fired those weapons at night when the range was closed. We'd go out in the woods somewhere, and you know, we do things like shoot at bags of laundry and bottles full of bleach.
What are you talking about?
What are you saying?
Oh, never mind. You don't understand how gun. You don't know the world. You don't know my world of guns. You may know the world of guns, but not the one I live in.
And the last thing he sees is a whole lot of yellow tape.
You better believe it.
Robert Green on the world famous Phil Henry Show on teaching a kid gun safety. We'll be right back.
That sounds kind of fun, though, if you think about it.
What does?
Shoot at a bag of laundry.
Broadcasting from the shores of Bell Pacifico, Bill Hendry.
Yeah, the Hulk Hogan?
No, man, not Hulk Hogan. Oh, boy.
What do you mean, Hulk Hogan?
I just heard him say Hogan.
Anyway, welcome back to the show. Hold on, bud. Welcome back to the show, the world-famous Phil Henry Show, here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Thank God it's Friday. Thank a larger God that it'll be Saturday soon.
What's that mean?
Yeah, you're going to get into trouble with some of your...
No, I'm not going to get in trouble. I just thank a larger God that there's...
You believe in a mobile deity.
Very good, bud. Do you believe in multiple deities? Are you pantheistic?
Yes, I am pantheistic. I worship frying pans.
I don't get it.
What do you mean you don't get it? Everybody else around here cracks a joke. You don't get that. She asked, was I pantheistic?
Yeah.
And I said, yes, I worship the frying pan. Okay. You know...
It wasn't funny.
What's pantheistic mean?
See, that's the problem. This idiot doesn't know what it means.
Robert...
Pantheistic means you believe in more than one god. You believe in multiple gods. Pantheistic. Okay?
Yeah, that'd probably be the multiply theistic or something, right?
Yeah, it would be. It'd be multiple.
Oh, is that right? Are you guys just kind of, what are you, falling back on your, what, Reader's Digest knowledge of words or something? The multiple theistic? Okay. Pantheistic is another one. And now that you know what pantheistic really means, is it any funnier when I say that I worship the pan?
Yeah, it's good.
It's very funny, Mr. Henry.
Yes, it's amusing.
God. All right, so in any event...
Well, don't get your nose out of joint. It was fine.
No, I'm not getting my nose out of joint. I'm just... I'm hurt. No, I'm kidding. All right, Kevin Hogan has taken Stanford to a place Andrew Luck never could, with the NFL's number one overall draft pick and an elite class of seniors gone, a program that weathered the loss of coach Jim Harbaugh once again faced questions. Stanford coach David Shaw answered every one of them, finding a new clutch quarterback along the way. Hogan threw for 155 yards and a touchdown. He ran for 47 yards and another score, helping 8th-ranked Stanford beat number 17 UCLA 27-24. Nice game, no UCLA. Nice way to keep it tight, baby. Put a scare into him. We didn't win, but, you know, I say we. I'm sorry, folks. I got to be a homer here. And are we on in the Bay Area anymore?
Not so as you'd notice.
Okay. Good job. UCLA 27-24. That's Stanford beating UCLA in the Pac-12 championship game Friday night. The redshirt freshman won game MVP honors while leading the Cardinal to the Rose Bowl for the first time in more than a decade. How about that?
When they say that Cardinal, they talk about just one. Like, you know how they'll say... like one giant bird?
It's a singular bird, yeah.
No, it's not a bird. It's not a bird.
It's the color, right?
Yes, it's the color. And I'll give you the history of the Stanford Cardinal if you want.
Oh, God, here we go again with history.
Well, you know what, bud? You're just going to have to sit there and listen, okay? They used to be called the Stanford Indians. That was the name of the team. And that was, I can still remember the little Stanford Indian head in the middle of the field, and the band would come out and make a little Stanford Indian head. It looked like just a kind of a generic Indian head with a feather. And it being Northern California, and it being the Bay Area, and it being the late 60s, early 70s, the beginnings of the countercultural awareness, and so on and so forth.
Well, what was Berkeley? Was Berkeley called an Indian?
Berkeley's always been the Bears. And Berkeley, of course, the hotbed of campus protest in America at a certain time. I'm sure the students found nothing wrong with calling the team Bears, unless you guys are going to think you're funny and start coming up with something about how Bears are offended.
Well, I mean, I don't think I'm funny, but...
Yeah, it's the same thing about being kind of animals or anything. You have a bear being the mascot of a violent football team. That's not going to help out animal awareness or anything.
You're really pushing it there, man.
I don't see how that helps at all with what... I agree with Phil.
What?
What are you talking about? We just shut up. So anyway, the Stanford Indians is what they were called. Now comes the awareness that Native American people... And it was an interesting thing because I was hitchhiking back in my younger days. I was thumbing. I was with my thumb out. You know what that is?
Yeah, I know what hitchhiking is.
Yeah, I'd seen it on a cartoon.
You saw it on a cartoon. Great. So anyway, I was hitchhiking one day through San Francisco. I was back in my halcyon, back in my gilded youth. And a freak, a hippie, as we called him in those days, a freak, picks me up in his pickup truck. I'm giving you some real hippie history here, okay? Is everybody listening?
Yeah, just bitching.
Did he give you LSD or anything?
No, he didn't give me LSD. Will you listen? So I jump into this guy's truck. I'm getting a ride through San Francisco. I'm on my way north. I'm going to Eureka. That's where I was headed. In any event, the guy is driving his truck, and he says, "You hear the news?" And I said, "No." He said, "Bunch of freaks took over Alcatraz." No, he says, "No, the Indians took over Alcatraz." Yeah, man, they all went over to Alcatraz, and the Indians set up, you know. I said, "You're kidding." And, of course, at the time, I think it was 19, and, you know, your mindset when you're younger is it's all about, you know, making the world new and everything that was going against the status quo, of course, you're excited about. And when I heard that a bunch of Native Americans or Indians had taken over Alcatraz, which at that time was, by then it was a park. I don't know really whether people were going over on tours. This was about 1970. But I do know that it was, you know, operated by the federal government. And so when the Indians took this over, my thinking was, oh, that's really cool, you know.
Well, what did you think they were going to do? Start another country?
Yeah, were you going to have Sitting Bull on their money or anything?
Sitting Bull. You imagine that? Have a guy on a month.
Will you guys shut up for a minute? So anyway, the Indians took over Alcatraz. Well, all of this awareness started to happen about Native Americans. Because there was all this stuff about black people, all this stuff about Hispanic people, all this stuff about women, all this stuff about gay folks, all this stuff about guys with plates in their head like you, bud.
Really?
No, I'm kidding. The handicap thing came along later. That was a little too much, you know. It was far too... They could deal with, you know...
Yeah, they could deal with black people. That's about as bad as they could go.
Now, why don't you shut... Hey. Tell them to shut up, bud.
I'm just saying...
Yeah, as low as they could go.
I'm handicapped, so I'm lower than you.
I didn't think of it that way.
Yeah, there you go. He's being self-effacing. Anyway, don't ask me what it means. Anyway, so the Native Americans, so Stanford is sitting there, and there's Indians taking over Alcatraz. There's Indians there, and they're saying, man, we can't have this Indian anymore. That ain't cool. So they changed the name to the Cardinal. And I think they changed it right after Stanford had a Heisman Trophy winner at quarterback. I think that season that they changed it away from Indians. I think it was last season he played at Stanford. They were the Indians. It was Jim Plunkett.
Oh, was he? He's the one that had the deaf, dumb, and blind father.
Deaf, dumb, and blind.
I'm not supposed to say that.
I'm sorry. He had his parents were deaf and dumb.
No, they were not, Margaret. They were blind. Jim Plunkett's parents were blind.
All right. Well, what are you reacting like that for?
You don't say deaf and dumb anymore. You say that they are hearing impaired. And hearing impaired people oftentimes have a difficult time speaking. I don't think you even have to go into the...
You don't have to say mouth impaired.
I've never heard anybody say mouth impaired, and I, you know...
Except the one girl I went out with, well, I better not.
How dare you? You're sitting with a lady.
You shut up.
I'm sorry.
mouth impaired. So in any event, they changed the name, and it was Jim Plunkett. His senior year, he won the Heisman Trophy. He went on to play professionally and stunk it out for a good 10 years before he got on with the Raiders, and that was the rebirth of Jim Plunkett. I'll tell you, that was a hell of a thing. You thought Jim Plunkett was the end of him, man. So there you go. Now, anyway, Stanford beats UCLA, but they barely hang on to beat UCLA by the score of 27-24. They send the Cardinal to the Rose Bowl game for the first time since 1999. Stanford, which improved to 11-2, will play the winner of Saturday's Big Ten Conference. Now, here's a really good one. The Big Ten Conference, which has 12 teams in it, or 11, I forget, is going to be played between Nebraska and Wisconsin. Why? Because Ohio State and Penn State are under the penalty of the NCAA.
Are you trying to tell me that Penn State, even without Joe Paterno?
What are you talking about, Paterno? Phil already told you it's Paterno.
Don't you talk to me like...
That's what he said.
Let her say what she wants.
I want to start all over again. Ohio State, without Joe Paterno, still qualified to be in the championship of the world, of not the world, but the Super Bowl.
It's not the Super Bowl. It's the championship of the Big Ten.
Oh, well, excuse me. I didn't know. Woe is me.
All right. So anyway, yeah, they were both on suspension from the NCAA, so the Big Ten championship is going to be a couple of teams that really shouldn't be there, Nebraska and Wisconsin. UCLA, which had hoped to gain its first Rose Bowl bid since the 98 season, is now bound for something that I think I can't figure it out. I hate it. I hate it with a passion. The Holiday Bowl or the Alamo Bowl.
Why do you hate it?
I can't stand those bowl games. I hate them. I don't like those secondary bowl games. Who watches them?
Well, the people that go to the schools.
Well, that's great. Even if I'm a UCLA or USC fan, which I am, although I'm mostly an SC fan, even if they go to something like the Alamo Bowl or the Holiday Bowl or some other bowl, the Toilet Bowl or something, man, I can't watch that stuff. I can't. What's the point, you know?
Yeah, they're going to win an Alamo championship. You don't want to root them down and everything?
Well, so what? So what, they win an Alamo championship? So what?
If you win an Alamo Bowl and you win an Alamo championship.
Yeah, so what, man? What's that mean? You champion of what?
Of the rental car football world.
Of the rental car football world.
Man, you're an idiot.
No, you don't understand what it's for.
What's it for, bud? To answer his question. You win the Alamo Bowl, what have you just won?
The
rental car championship.
Gonna get more ass than...
Shut up with the more ass joke. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. Speaking of dirty words, I've got a story for you about guns, about one that my father owned, and one that I tried to find online. Who makes it? I can't... Maybe one of you guys out there will be able to find this gun. It was a little handgun that my dad showed me once that had a, quote, humorous, end quote, name. The world famous Phil Hendry Show coming back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
All right, welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show this Friday night at philhendryshow.com. Right now, as we speak, is a live-streaming video cast of our show here from the El Pacifico. You can take part in it. You can be a member of our BSP family. And I would suggest that now's the time because, oh, I forgot to tell you.
I knew you were going to... You almost forgot.
I've got a big announcement for you. Starting Monday now, we have a special gift for all of our new subscribers.
Yes, indeed.
And starting on Monday, we're going to be giving away a gift to our... Now, I got to get this right because I'm going to screw this thing up.
Yeah, it's right here. You just, right here if you're looking at...
I got it, bud.
Well, you're going to mess it up.
No, I'm not going to mess it up. I got the email here and I'm going to read. Here it is. Starting on Monday... One free digital CD for a new monthly subscription. So if you sign up for a month, you get one free digital download CD. And take a look in our shop. You'll see all of the CDs, the best ofs and the best of Bobby Dooley and the best of Ted Bell. They're all there. You get one of those for free for your 3 month for your monthly subscription. You get 3 free digital CDs for a new semi-annual subscription. That would be a 6 month subscription, and you'll get 5 free digital CD downloads for a new annual subscription. Now, this is a beautiful thing, baby, because 5 CDs. What are we charging for the CDs? I forget. That's $100, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I'd like $19.99
for the CDs?
I think so, yeah.
So that's $100 value for your 1 year subscription. And for your 6 month subscription, you're getting a $60 value, and you're getting a $20 value for your monthly subscription. So I would say you're saving money. And these downloads, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, these come directly from our digital tapes. These are the first generation quality masters. And they're as good, in other words, as it gets in terms of the quality. And they come from us to you with love in our hearts. So check it out. That starts Monday at philhendryshow.com. philhendryshow.com. And along with everything else that you get with a subscription, which of course is over close to 5,000 hours of our radio show going back over a decade, our nightly video cast. We've got live streaming coming up by the middle of December, live streaming for iPhone and iPad. We have on demand for iPhone and iPad right now, for Droids, you name it, we got it, and it's going to get better because we're rolling out a new design by the middle of the month. I mean, I'm really excited about it.
Well, finally, you're putting some effort into this.
Wait a second.
That's dirty pool.
No, I'm just saying, you're finally getting up off your dead ass and you're doing something.
Wait a minute, man. I've been working my ass off.
I think the website could be a lot better, and it is now going to be a lot better.
Oh, well, thank you very much. By the way, we have a new episode of our podcast out today, episode 80, and it features Andrew Chase, a very rarely used guest of ours. Andrew Chase was on the show, and he was a Canadian writer, and he was talking about having to deal with the U.S. border after 9/11. And he said he's Canadian, so why does he have to be fingerprinted and photographed? It ain't like he comes from south of the border.
Uh-oh.
That's right. So that's on our episode 80, today's Phil Hendry podcast. All right, now, one day when I was in my gilded youth, another story from my halcyon days, my old man is sitting there at his desk at our house, and it was a Saturday afternoon. I don't know what he was doing. He was doing some work. He was, you know, fooling around. He was typing. He was looking at Playboy. I don't know what he was doing. So anyway, I walked over there, and I was asking him something or talking to him, and he said, "Hey, I want to show you something." And he had a gun. And my father says, my father had guns. This was a handgun. It was a small handgun. It looked like a small caliber gun. It looked like it was no bigger than a Derringer, as I mentioned to Dan during the break. And on the handle, and he laughed about it. See that? And on the handle was written what we now commonly know is a word, a disparaging, insulting, degrading word for gay people. On the handle of this gun was written the word F.
A.
Shut up. I don't want to use the word. You understand?
I understand.
So it was F. Okay.
Yes. It was. If it said gay, only it was the one that starts with F. It was 3 letters. He says, "Look at that. You see that? It's a blank." I thought, wow. Now, even at that age, being a young man, even then I recognized that it was probably a foreign-made gun, and my dad did, in fact, confirm that. He said it was a French. It was either a French or German gun. I can't remember. And he said, how about, he was laughing, and it was the 1968 or something, and back in the days when you would laugh about that kind of a thing. Not that it meant my father was a hate-filled person. He wasn't at all, but he laughed, as people would. Now, I was going to inherit that gun, believe it or not. When my father died, there wasn't a whole lot, but there were a few items that supposedly were going to be dispersed among the kids. I never saw this gun, and I thought it was going to be my gun, which maybe was a statement about me by my father.
Yeah, I was going to say, Dad probably, here, give.
Shut up.
Well, it wasn't anything personal.
No, it wasn't anything personal. It was you know, I was going to get one of the guns. I guess my brother was going to get another. I don't think my dad had that many. Anyway, I'm bringing this up because we were talking about handguns and gun safety and gun control, and then all of a sudden it struck me this one day standing there at my dad's desk and looking at this gun, F-A, you know, blankety blank, and he says, look at that, see? And I think I asked him at the time, I said, Dad, where's that gun from, and why do I think he said France? I don't know, but I'm sure he said France. But now I'm thinking maybe he said Germany. But nonetheless, I went online here a moment ago.
Well, you're not going to find that online. I mean, if you put that word in to a search engine on today's internet, you're going to find, I'm sure, some of the most vulgar and vile sites known to man. Am I right?
You're absolutely right.
What'd you put in?
I put in that word, F-A, you know what, only I capitalized it because I thought, well, maybe they're initials for a company, you know.
They're like a French ammunition gun company.
I don't think it's that, but, you know, I thought it was French, maybe, or German. It was the German language. So I put that word in. I also put in handgun. I also put in France, and then I tried it with Germany, and I didn't know what else to put in there, but it just, you're right, Margaret, all that came up was a bunch of garbage, you know.
Like what?
Well, you know, a bunch of, you know, the dirty, it was all F-word, having to do with somebody being, it was a bunch of hateful jackballs, so... I only put that out there to say, if anybody knows anything about this, if you've ever heard of this gun, if you've ever seen it, it was, in fact, I know I saw it. It was a small caliber weapon, and it was, and I was supposed to get, and you know what, it kind of bothered me, you know, after my father died. I said, well, no, where's this gun? Nobody knew.
Well, maybe you imagined it.
Maybe I imagined it. Nothing, man. I saw it, okay?
Yeah, a lot of times with the passage of time, Mr. Henry, a lot of things, you know, our brain...
The brain begins to dry up a little bit.
Oh, get out of here. I saw it, and I know I saw it. We'll be right back with more here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. Rihanna flashes a massive diamond ring and her nearly naked ass all at once. Yeah.
All right.
Shut up.
Phil Henry.
Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. We're online at philhenryshow.com. And, of course, we are with you each and every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. And we're very grateful to be with you as well and having a lot of fun. What am I trying to do? Oh, there we go. We're just switching a camera view here on Phil TV in HD. Don't forget about our offer beginning on Monday. 1 month subscription, you get a free CD download. A 6 month subscription, you get 3 CD downloads. And for a full year, what did we say it was?
I believe you said...
You got it right here. For 1 year...
Bud, why do you stick that in my face?
I'm not sticking your face.
He's got it over there.
Let's see. 1 year... Here, hold that. All right, 6 months...
Give me that! Five. That's why I said it's $100.
How do you know it's $100?
Well, it's roughly $20. So anyway, Monday. As of Monday, when you subscribe to the Phil Henry Show website. All right, I want to get on the line here. We have some callers hanging on. We're also going to be talking here about Rihanna in a moment and what she's up to with the new ring and the bare ass. Whatever, man. I mean, like, you know, anything makes news now. It doesn't much matter what it is. Anything, anybody... Let's go to Alhambra. Hi. You're on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, sir.
Yes. Mr. Henry, this is a call. I've called your program before, sir.
Yes, sir. I recognize you.
Yes, sir.
Who is this?
This is Lloyd, bona fide in Alhambra, California. And the question that you had raised about, and I understand your sensitivity, the F word is called a friend of mine.
Now, slow down for just a second.
Okay.
Because you said a lot of stuff. A friend of yours?
Yeah, I was going to say a friend of mine had the grip on a pistol that he had. This was a German Luger that he had obtained, I believe, from an army buddy who had been in the European theater in World War II. And he had the grip personalized, and his name was Francis Allen Gorton. Francis G-O-R-T-O-N is the last name. First name spelled F-R-A.
Okay, yeah, no.
Now, hold on. F-R-A-N-C-I-S.
His name is Gorton Francis?
No, I didn't. I don't know what. Is that the host speaking?
No, this is the host. It was one of my co-hosts, or my one of my assistants.
That was a person. All right. It sounded as if you'd scraped a chair across the floor.
No, sir. My name's Bud Dickman, sir. And I just... Was your friend's name Gorton?
Yes, sir. His name was Gorton.
That's his last name, though.
Yes, sir. That's his last name.
You know, you said his first name's Gorton.
No, sir, his first name is not Gorton. I'm not aware of any culture in this country or on the earth that you and I inhabit where a man's first name is Gorton. I don't know of any culture that would tolerate such a thing. I called up because I heard Mr. Henry, who we listen to at night sometimes. My wife and I alternate, you know, between the radio, and we'll watch some of the television and so forth. They took Highway to Heaven off. I don't know if you're aware of that.
And all right, I apologize, sir. I should have jumped in and told you. What I wanted to ask you...
We listened to your program, Mr. Henry.
Thank you very much. I appreciate this, sir. But what I want to know is, your friend's name was what? Give me his name again.
Yes, sir. His name was Francis Allen Gorton. Now...
I see. Okay.
Yeah, and so he had the grip on this German Luger... He had it personalized, don't you know? And they personalized it, don't you know? And then that was hence those initials.
Oh, I see. Yes, sir. This is Margaret. How are you, sir?
And who are you?
My name is Margaret Gray.
I'm very pleased to meet you, ma'am. Yes, I'm Lloyd.
Yes, how are you doing?
I'm very good.
And you were in the military?
Yes, I was. I was in the United States Navy. 1950 to 1952 in Korea. But this was an older friend of mine. He's passed on now, Frank Gorton, Francis Allen Gorton.
And so he had these initials put on this gun.
Yes, he did. He had a embossed, raised...
Okay, that, you don't have to go into a lot of detail.
Bud?
Who? I'm not going... Who is that?
It's no one. Bud, just back off.
Well, yeah, it was someone. I heard someone... Say, I don't have to go into a lot of detail?
Well, I just, you know, we already know.
You know, young man, I'm going to go into detail because this is my friend, Francis Allen Gorton, all right? And I'll go into detail. Don't worry about that. So, in any event...
You go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much.
And what was your friend's name again?
I beg your pardon?
What was your friend's name again?
His name was Francis Allen Gorton, and he was his initials.
Yeah, put on a butt of the gun. Where else are you gonna put initials like that? You gotta put them on the butt.
You know, I'll tell you, I've called a lot of talk shows.
Hold on for just a moment, sir. Get out of here.
Wait a second.
Get out of here. You too.
I didn't do anything. All I did was laugh.
That's right. That's all you need to do. Get out.
I've called a lot of talk radio programming in the days of how I've been on, when I have turned on a radio and listened to it, and there's a talk show on there. I'm now listening to a talk show, and then when that happens, I call up. Probably one every two times that I turn on the radio and a talk program is on, I will call it. It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter what they're talking about. I will, every other time I alternate.
Well, even if it's, what if it's like a gardening show?
I can't hear the lady.
She said, what if it's a gardening show?
Is this the lady speaking?
No, I'm the lady. That was Mr. Henry.
Well, I talk, if it's a what?
If it's a gardening show. What if it's a gardening show?
What if it's a gardening show? I don't understand.
In other words, Lloyd, if you call up every other time you hear a talk show...
No, 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 know, if they're talking like the kind that G. Gordon Liddy does. Do you know G. Gordon Liddy?
Yes, I do, sir.
All right, that kind of show.
All right, a bad one.
I beg your pardon?
Nothing. So your friend had his initials put on this gun.
Yes, he had his initials put on the gun, and I never saw the weapon after he died. Now, he died in 1962, and he was a neighbor of mine in Alhambra. Now, I understand, I'm given to understand, Mr. Henry, that you grew up in the San Gabriel Valley. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. Your father, therefore, was in the San Gabriel Valley, which is adjacent to Alhambra.
Now, I see what you're saying. Was that the gun?
Bingo. Give the lady a cigar. Give her a cigar and a shot and a Rolling Rock beer. Bingo. You got it.
And a shot of what?
Just never mind. So you're thinking that my father came into possession of this gun.
I'm thinking, what are the odds? What are the odds that a guy has FAG on the handle of the butt of a gun, and then it turns up on another guy's butt, not another guy's butt, I mean on another, it turns up in another guy's, in his bedroom, in his house, and...
My father had this in his office at our house.
And do you know where he got it? Let me repeat this very carefully. Do you know where he got it?
I don't.
Damn. Because this would go a long way towards solving this problem of Francis Allen Gorton and the Luger.
Oh, a Luger. No, my dad did not have a Luger.
So in other words, if I hadn't said Luger, we would be still talking.
Yeah, there's no reason to keep talking to you now.
Now, wait a minute. Do you want to buy a water heater?
Okay,
Well, why would you hang up on that man?
I'm done talking to him, okay? You know, I thought I was showing a lot of patience with the chap. He's a very nice old guy, and I appreciate that, and I kicked Bud and Robert out of here, but the guy's talking to me about Francis Allen Gorton, and my father didn't have a Luger. He had a smaller gun.
Well, you don't even know what a Luger looks like, do you? You're not proficient in weapons.
No, I am not proficient in weapons, but I damn sure know what a Luger looks like. Okay, it's got a narrow barrel. It's got a big... thing. It looks, and a Nazis, you know, and everything like that.
Yeah.
See?
Okay, so you know what a Luger looks like. But how do you know your father wasn't holding a Luger?
He wasn't. I'm telling you, he was holding a smaller gun.
Your father was holding a gun on you?
My father was holding a gun on... No, it was the gun my dad had. Oh. Thank you very much for your call, sir. World famous Phil Henry Show. Rihanna is on an Instagram roll. You know what? Who's that cat? The whale or whatever? He says, put that S on Instagram. Anyway, Rihanna's on an Instagram roll. A night after making waves with her crisp brown bear hug, the unapologetic artist zoomed in on a sparkling diamond ring on her pinky finger and posted the pic to Instagram. And what shows off bling better than a plush velvet-lined jewel box? Rihanna's bare curves, of course. Chris Brown talked Twitter maturity, presumably before deleting his account after a feud. She tagged the photo in which her ring sporting hand rests against her nearly naked hip, her ever-increasing number of tattoos providing all the coverage she needs. Dope dealer sans the S blank blank T is also one of the tags that Bad Golarini used this week to describe a pic of her gleaming Rolex. All right, so whatever. Anyway, so there's Rihanna. Everybody's on Instagram now, and I mean everybody, especially hip-hop artists, especially R&B artists.
Well, why do you say that?
Because it's very, it's visual. It's an extension of show business. And I believe hip-hop artists, rap artists come from the completely opposite direction of rock and roll artists. What I mean by that is rock and roll... While it's visual, and everybody, you know, loves to go to a rock and roll show and see, or a rock show and see, as well as hear, because there's always some sort of theatrics going on. I mean, every band is known for something. Everyone is known for some form of pyrotechnic or some sort of stage presence. But it's not really, I don't think it's really a visual. It's not really a visual, not a visual art form the way hip-hop and R&B is.
Well, what he said is because black people like to...
Yeah, black people like to put on a lot of bling and stuff.
Get out of here, man.
No, I'm not saying because black people like to put on. I'm saying that maybe it's a function of the race of the artist. Maybe, I don't know. But there is a much more visual sense to R&B and hip hop. I mean, look, dancing is a big part of R&B and hip hop. It is not a big part of a rock show or a rock and roll presentation. Maybe people dance at those shows, but the bands themselves are sort of just grunged up, young white boys and stuff, and they're just kind of bopping around the stage as to however they feel like bopping around the stage. But you have a lot of choreography, and there's a lot more synchronized stage stuff happening. It's visual, and I think that's why Instagram is, where they like to go.
Well, are there no rock and roll groups that post on Instagram?
Yeah, there are. But most of the time, I look at some of the stuff that's posted by people who are in rock and roll bands. It's generally individual stuff. Hey, here's me with my cat, or here I am getting off the plane and I'm walking to the hotel or stuff like that. I don't see a lot of, there wasn't anybody showing their ass, and I wish there was. Now then.
Yeah, I bet you do. Which people show their butt?
Never mind, okay? Which people show their butt. Anyway, I don't follow that many people on Instagram. I follow like 20 people. All the people I follow on Instagram are all, it's weird how this happened.
You got a lot like older.
My godson, Joe, because he's all over everything. My godson, Joe, is on Instagram. He's on Twitter. He's on Facebook. This dude is all over the place. So he and I started like following each other. And then came Katie, his sister. And then came the whole damn clan. So there's all of these kids. A lot of them are nieces and nephews that are following me. So I'm following them back. And that's it. And just a handful of people that have been sort of hanging with me since the very beginning, like Johnny Bean and people like that.
Well, do you, what kick do you get out of Instagram?
I don't really, I got to be honest with you, I don't like Instagram. I like Instagram and I like seeing what other people post. But I'm rarely over there. And the stuff that I want to do is not popular on Instagram.
Like what?
Like the stuff that's popular on Instagram has to do with just, here's a people, pictures of people. People love to see pictures of people. They love to see the guy with a girl, the girl with a girl, got people doing stuff, family. That generally gets a lot of likes from people. They're not, nobody is really nuts about the artsy-fartsy, artistic, crazy, blended photograph thing that I like to do. I like to do stupid-looking, goofy stuff, and I don't know. I guess I had to just do it for myself, and,
Well, you could just sit at home and do all your interesting pictures and start a website called Phil's Really Cool Art, and no one will care.
Put it on your own website.
Yeah, I could, but no one's going to care, like Margaret said. Oh, we got a break. Okay, we got a break. I was talking too much.
Yeah, but no one cares.
Margaret, we'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
What do you smell?
I smell someone cooking eggs or
farting eggs.
Thank you, Dan Northcraft. He found what we were looking for. I didn't think we would ever find it because just entering in those initials of F-A, and you're going to get all kinds of stupid stuff. But as just to kind of recap the story so you guys know what I'm talking about, and I wish I could throw this over on the computer on Phil TV. I will later. I can't get over there right now. But I do have the camera on 3, so you can look over my shoulder. And Dan found this after he entered into the search engine F period. And again, this is not a slur on any people. This is the name of a gun, folks. These are the initials. And when I was a 16-year-old, 17-year-old kid and my father was in his office, he said, look at this gun I have. It was a small it looked like a small caliber gun. It was a small handgun. And it had these initials on it, F-A-G. Now, Dan entered into the search engine, F period, A period, G period, pistols, and up came the gun. It is a Beretta, and FAG stands for Fabrica Ami Gura, or Guerra, which is Spanish for war. AMI, well, government organization that stays war weapons arsenal. FAG means Fabrica AMI Guerra, a government organization that stands for war. Whoever wrote this doesn't know how to spell. In fact, whoever wrote this is their second language. I mean, their first language can't be English. Charged for inspection of guns produced by subcontractors to be distributed to the Italian army. From 1939 onwards, Model 34 pistols showed a profusion of marks. The most relevant is the crowned FAG mark with two digits, referring to a proof year or a year of acceptance. So this was an inspection arm of the Italian military. It wasn't the name of the gun. It was the stamp of the inspecting agency that looked at this particular handgun, which was this is a Beretta. Now, I have to ask myself, why am I looking at did this stamp go on all these guns? It only went on Model 34 pistols. Model 34 Beretta pistols showed a profusion of marks. The most relevant is the crowned FAG mark. On the right side of the trigger guard, there's an ellipse with two initials, indicating the inspector. In some other parts, there could be other inspection or subcontractor punches. The most curious aspect of the weapon is the fact that the year of construction indicated on the slide, 1940, does not coincide with the FAG punch, 1939. So perhaps it concerns a weapon, ba ba boom boom. This is obviously a site for collectors or people that want to make sure.
Is this a way that collector going to know it's the right gun?
Yeah, I think when you're collecting anything, and in this case guns, you want to ensure that you're getting what you think it is you're getting, and there are a number of identifying marks that collectors look for. And obviously this is it's not an antique, but I don't know what qualifies as an antique in the gun world, but it's an old gun. It's 1939, so we're talking 70 plus years. On the middle of 1940, the inspection punch changed from crown fag year to ivy. Anyway, FAG, I shouldn't say that. And they have close-ups showing these FAG marks. And there it is. A Beretta. Thank you, Dan. What's the caliber of this, do they say? We'll find out. I'll put this thing up on the screen. We'll be back. World-famous Phil Hendry Show, solving mysteries. And with Bud Dickman driving everybody crazy every night. We'll be right back.
Phil Hendry.
Well, I found, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, Saturday morning, and we're getting ready, of course, to enjoy our weekend as you are, too. If you guys are third shift, and we got another hour of great radio ahead here. We are going to be talking, if I'm not mistaken, I think we're going to be settling in with Harvey Weinman. We didn't have a lot of time with him on the air the other night, so we're going to talk to him about weapons and military issues, Harvey being an ex-Marine. We also have Dr. Ron Tarner, who's going to be joining us this hour on some scientific matters, of which I have no idea. Why is he on?
Well, you were talking about LSD.
Yeah, when you talked about maybe that guy gave you LSD.
What guy gave me LSD?
Phil didn't say that. You asked if the man did, and he said no.
I thought you said you did.
You know, I wish you guys had listened to me. Nobody gave me any LSD. So you got Dr. Tarner on to talk about what?
How to get what the antidote is.
Yeah, you eat egg whites, and then you eat...
What do you mean the antidote to LSD? Oh, God, man.
Well, I thought that's what you wanted.
What do you mean the antidote to LSD eat egg whites? Anyway, wait till he comes on the air and finds out that we got him out of bed for nothing.
Yeah, he's awake anyway. He said he takes a handful of speed some nights. He likes.
All right, that's that's fine. Anyway, so we're going to be doing that now. Just to conclude this entire folderol about the handgun that I just mentioned it a couple of hours ago. Dan Northcraft helped us find it, and it is a Beretta. The FAG mark is a government inspection mark that appeared on the model of gun in question, a Beretta manufactured in 1934, and these different markings were a part of the inspection that the Italian Army did during the Second World War or prior to it. I think this particular model, it's a 34, and I think the stamp, the FAG stamp that we saw here was from 1939 or 40. And it makes sense because my father was stationed in Italy in the Second World War, and there's no question that he traded with somebody for this gun, or he was given it, or somehow came into possession of it while he was there in Italy. And there I was some 23 years after the... it was 1968, 23 years after he'd come home, and there he was holding that gun.
A little bit of history, but you see, I think that is... how a lot of men in your generation came to not be so frightened by the prospect of weapons and war.
No, that's not it at all, Margaret. I don't want to get into a political thing, okay?
Yeah, it's making a point, though.
No, I don't want to get into a political thing. It's got nothing to do with that. What are you talking about? I don't think that war is good. I hate it, just like anybody would hate it. But I'm not so freaking disconnected from reality to think that we don't need it. Are you kidding me? Come on.
What do you mean we need it?
War? Are you telling me that we don't need war?
I'm absolutely telling you that, and I'm telling you this. There are mothers, and there are other people who are working for a war-free world.
Margaret, I absolutely praise you for that. But are you trying to tell me we don't need war?
Why do you think we need war?
Because there's jackballs out there, man, that want to bring war to us, whether we like it or not.
Well, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about all this war talk, you know.
No, I don't know.
Yeah, you don't even understand what men have to do.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, okay, Audie Murphy.
What's that?
He was a war hero from World War II that got famous and he went into the movies. All right. Welcome back to the program here, 877-876-7445. Dr. Ron Tarner joining us from the Cloverfield Observatory in Mountain Meadow, Colorado. And it's been a long time, Ron. How are you?
Well, hello, Phil. It's good to speak with you, and very good to speak with you, Ms. Gray, and everybody. It is exciting to be on the air with you, Phil.
The guys called you up and wanted you to comment on LSD. Is that what they told you?
They called me and asked me if I would come on and talk about the effects of LSD. And I said to them that I don't know anything about the effects of LSD in general, but I could as it pertains to antidotes. I think that's what they wanted to know about.
Why did you guys ask him about antidotes?
Because I thought that hippie gave you LSD.
I never said anything of the sort.
Well, I did find an angle. I was going through some of my letters and papers, and I did think of a way of speaking of LSD as it pertains to astronomy, but also as it pertains to science in general, but not from the standpoint of an antidote or from the standpoint of a layperson using LSD. This was more in terms of the scientific community using LSD to further its own reputation. Many people in the science industry using LSD to further their reputation as thinkers, as explorers, as discoverers, as researchers, and so forth. I'm sure you understand what I mean.
No, I don't understand what you mean. Are you saying that there are people in the...
There are people in the scientific community who have experimented with, and at times not even experimented with, but have gone out and used psychotropic drugs in order to expand their minds and see things that they might not be able to see were they not under the influence. And a lot of this has happened in the astronomy field. A lot of this has happened in the I'm not even going to bring up Stephen Hawking because you know I have a prejudice there.
Yes, I think that you do, and I don't want to bring up anything having to do with drug use and Dr. Hawking. I wouldn't want to have anybody bringing up anything having to do with drug use, and you, if you weren't here to dispute it.
I appreciate that, Phil.
Okay, so let's not even go there.
I'm not going to go there. Dr. Stephen Hawking gets a pass tonight. And some of the wild things that he's come up with. But if you don't want me to say anything...
No, I don't. I don't want you to say it. You can comment on his work, which I know you hold in disdain.
I absolutely do.
And I know you don't like him, and that's fine, and I understand that. I don't think on our show we should be discussing personalities. I think we should be discussing just the raw, hard facts, you know?
Well, Phil, Dr. Stephen Hawking, I will give you, is a brilliant man. But, and I'm only going to, this is only my opinion, but some of the wild and kooky and goofy stuff that he comes up with, I can't believe he had taken a hit of Lyser.
Okay, let's see. That's what I'm talking about. And what kooky stuff did he come up with?
Yeah, you said gooky stuff. I don't know if that matters.
Did you say gooky or kooky?
I said kooky.
Yeah, I heard gooky.
I did, too. Well, look.
All right, whatever you want. What crazy stuff?
Well, his whole theory on black holes, I'm telling you, someone had to have dosed something he was drinking. And I'm not trying to be funny. For him to come up with what he came up with on black holes, I believe he was dosed that night. I believe.
How do you know it was a night?
Because I don't think anyone could come up with the ideas and the concepts that he's come up with surrounding the black hole in the middle of the day with the lights on, with the brightness of the sun, with the hope of a new day. With children going to and fro to school, I don't think anyone could come up with the dark, black, sadistic vision of creation that Hawking came up with in the daytime. It had to have been at night, and it had to have been under the influence of a mind-altering and psyche-altering drug.
All right, that's your opinion, and that's we're going to let it go at that. I don't want to go any further with it.
Well,
I'm sorry, Doc. I'm not going any further with that. That's your opinion. I'm not going any further with it. Let's talk. You said that you had...
Well, I've got a couple of ideas. In my field, which is astronomy, and all right, this takes it far away from Dr. Hawking. This takes it to another individual that you may not know that well. His name is Dr. Peter Brand. And Dr. Brand has long been respected as one of the... Fields, great thinkers and great imagineers, if you will, is the term they use at Disneyland. He envisions a planet beyond, and when I say envisions, he theorized the existence of a planet beyond Vulcan. As you know, Vulcan is the 10th planet that has been theorized and was first written about by William Bauer back in the 1940s.
I don't know any of this stuff.
Well, you can trust me on this.
Talk about Vulcan, where do Vulcans come from?
No, I'm not talking about Vulcans as in Star Trek, no. I'm talking about a planet theorized by William Bauer and postulated and written about.
Okay, so this is not Star Trek, bud.
Well, but the Star Trek had a Vulcan.
They might have had a Vulcan, and they might have had the planet Vulca.
No, it was Vulcan.
Yeah, that they called a Vulcan, and they called a guy that come from there Vulcan.
Well, that's your first indication that whoever cooked that up was a real clown. Because what are you laughing at?
What are you laughing at?
Well, I just had the idea. I just realized I called Gene Roddenberry a clown, but
well, if he was, he was, you know. But I don't think so. I think Gene Roddenberry was an entertainer, and he came up with what he came up with.
Well, there's no planet named Vulcan. Yes, the planet's Vulcan, but if there's a person from Vulcan called a Vulcan, then it would have to be Vulca or Vulcan.
Okay, I don't know. What did you want to say about this guy?
It isn't him. It's someone who postulated. It was Dr. Peter Brand who came up with the idea of a 11th planet, which I don't think it's been given a name yet. I'd have to check, but it was on the astronomical charts as simply CB5. 17X, CB5 17X, And this was the astronomical market given it by Dr. Brad.
So they haven't given it a name, huh?
No, they have not given it a name. And is that because most people in the scientific community don't think it exists? I'm one of them.
You don't think this planet exists?
Oh, no. Because I happen to know that Bran and his wife gave frequent LSD parties. Now, what do I mean by an LSD party?
Okay, so you think he cooked this up on LSD?
I think that... hold on for a minute. Let me get it. An LSD party is when you invite people over on a Friday night. Generally, the clothes come off, and there's a hot tub involved. And people wander around naked, but it has nothing to do with sex. It has to do with intellectual conversation. It has to do with intellectual stimulation, if you will. But it has nothing to do with sex. There are just naked people wandering around. And they've taken LSD, and they're getting in and out of hot tubs.
Oh, you hold on for a minute. I want to get Alf on the line. Who's this guy?
This guy from Santa Barbara. Sir.
Alf?
Hey, Bill, this is Alf. I listen to this gentleman talking, and I had to call in the program because I think he's saying some things that they're damaging to a lot of people who have been involved in this for the 40s. Okay, my name is Alf Anil, and I've been living in Santa Barbara since around 1970s, but I was in the Big Sur area in Northern California.
Were you at all aligned with the Esalon Institute? Not Esalon, but S.
Yes, I've been to the with the Dr. Earhart's Institute. I've been and I also was with some of Henry Miller's people there, and we took an awful lot of LSD. And you're talking about wandering around nude. I wandered everywhere with no clothes on, but there was nothing. First of all, I want you to know something. This was an artistic pursuit. It had nothing to do with cooking up planets.
Let me say something to you, Alf, if I could.
I'm sorry, Mr. Henry. I know a little bit about what this gentleman's talking about.
But I'm very glad that you called.
We have to break, okay?
Oh, come on, will you?
We got a break. Hold on. We've got Alf from Santa Barbara and Dr. Ron Tarner, and we're getting into now a conversation about early LSD use. I don't know.
Yeah, it's about when they took LSD and they cooked up planets.
No, this is something else. The other guy's calling about something else. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
All right, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL, as we're talking here with Dr. Ron Tarner, and we also have a gentleman from Santa Barbara, Alf Pinth, who was... Alf, you were in Big Sur, Northern California?
Yeah, I was in the Northern California, Phil. I was at two institutes up there. These were places they were learning, and they were places where we were... A lot of writers. There were a lot of artists. There were people who were involved in alternative, investigating alternative lifestyles. You know, you might say it was a forerunner to the hippies, the beatniks, and this sort of thing. I can't say that I knew Henry Miller, but he was one of the people who was there. Now, there were some people who used and got their hands on early LSD.
Well, you know, LSD was developed in the 1940s.
Right, exactly. But there were people that brought some. I don't know. Don't ask me how, but they got a hold of this. They would take LSD and they strip. I stripped after eating peyote and smoking marijuana, but I did not use LSD.
All right. And what you say you stripped?
I took my clothes off, and I wandered as far as Pacific Coast Highway until. I was almost killed one night because I was crossing Pacific Coast Highway to one of the general stores that they had in those days, the Big Sur.
Yeah, you're talking about Big Sur, California.
Yes, exactly, because, again, this is the same Big Sur that eventually became a place where the hippies went, and now, of course, very upscale.
Yeah, Big Sur is real, very upscale, but you're there in the 40s. What do you mean you stripped and wandered across the highway?
Well, this gentleman was talking about LSD.
Well, yeah, I don't know if we're getting too off the subject. I'm talking about the... LSD that was used by early artists and eventually was used by scientists. I know two astronomers And I met you, Dr. Peter Bradfield, because he was a regular LSD user at these LSD parties.
Right, but what I'm saying to the doctor is these were pioneered in California.
Well, when you say pioneered, what do you mean?
I mean the idea of people in a communal setting without any clothes taking LSD.
But you say you never took it.
No, I did not, because the LSD that was available at that time was in limited use. A lot of people ate peyote. A lot of people smoked marijuana. There were some people that smoked opium, this sort of thing.
So we're talking about the early days of drug experimentation. We're not encouraging this because much of this drug experimentation was found to be absolutely useless.
I feel you're right. I mean, there's some people. But the point that I'm making is I wandered up onto PCH one night on my way to a general store because I was hungry, and I went in there and I caused a ruckus because they didn't have any beef jerky or something. So I was arrested, and I was taken to the Julia Pfeiffer Station, which was the Julia Pfeiffer State Park Station, and booked into the Contra Costa Sheriff's substation there, booked, with no clothes on, having smoked opium. I don't know what I was smoking marijuana, and I'd taken peyote.
All right, so you had gone into a general store and had done what?
I had no clothes on. And I created I grabbed a hold of the guy that owned the place, and I was looking for beef jerky, as I was telling you.
Well, all right, so you're looking for beef jerky. What's the point?
The point is that I know a little something about these LSD parties that this man's talking about. And
all right, well, listen, thank you very much, Alf.
And I just wanted to tell you about that.
Yeah, I appreciate that very much, pal. Thank you for calling us, and have a good evening.
All right, pal, I enjoyed your program very much, and
that has nothing to do with anything I'm talking about.
No, I don't think it does. He's talking about he goes into a general store. And
yeah, that sounds like more like an alcohol effect or something. But I'm talking at Peter Brad's house where they had LSD parties in order to have these, what they thought were intelligent conversations about science and so forth. Now, at the end of the night, Brad and his guests are sitting around, and they have painted their faces. They have decorated themselves. In some cases, the men have tied things around their private part. And you realize at the end of the night, nobody has done anything other than act like an ass. Now, Brad came out of these LSD parties theorizing that there was an 11th planet, all right, that he wanted to call something like Bongo. Or I'm trying to find it by notes.
I thought you said it had no name.
It has no name. No, but he wanted to call it Bongo or Conga.
What are you talking about, Bongo?
That was the name of the planet.
Has anybody taken this jackass seriously?
No, Phil, that's what I'm telling you. No one has taken him seriously because he was heavily into the use of LSD.
Well, then there's nothing to worry about, I would think.
Okay, I mean, if you're...
I mean, that's what I'm saying. There's,
But what I'm saying is you've got to be careful of that.
Absolutely. And I know that the guys called you up and had you on tonight to talk about the antidote for LSD.
Well, I've got, yeah. And Robert, you don't know what you're talking about. It's not egg whites. It's something else than egg whites.
But I just thought that's what it was.
All right, anyway, thank you. Dr. Ron Tarner. Thanks, Ron.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, you found out about that guy's planet.
That's fine. That's fine. The guy drops acid and imagines a planet named Bongo. Okay, no one in the scientific community takes him seriously. So, Ron, I don't think there's any real threat to the astronomy, the astronomical thing. We'll be right back, Phil Hendry Show.
If a planet does, if they ever name a planet Bongo, you'll know who to blame.
Phil Hendry.
Phil, 877-876-7445. We're going to go to Dale here on the Phil Hendry Show. Dale, go ahead.
Hi, Phil. How are you?
Good.
Phil, I've been listening to
your program, I want to preface my remarks by saying I've listened to talk radio for many years, and I've listened to a lot of programs that have been informative, and I just so you know, I'm calling from the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania area. We come from an area where we've got a lot of talk radio here.
Uh-huh.
And I've got to tell you that I feel embarrassed for you because I just cannot understand how you, with so much going on in the world, how you have on your program this sort of parade of I can only call them bizarre people, and I'm referring to the doctor you had on about discussing LSD. You had another elderly gentleman, I guess, who was discussing. Do you know the man I'm talking about, sir?
Yes, sir. I mean, I'm letting you have your say.
Well, I don't have much to say other than that you had a doctor on and you had a man on who was purported to have taken his clothes off and was using drugs, illicit drugs. I think you mentioned marijuana and going into a business, a place of business, and assaulting the business owner and this kind of thing. And we have so much that's going on. Washington, D.C., and Obama, what he's done to this country, I can't even begin to describe. I wish that you would talk more about what Obama has done. He's destroyed any chance we have of recovering this country intact. It'll take us 100 years, in my opinion, to catch up to where we were. And by then, we will be a third world nation, and Obama, and only Obama.
So what would you like me to do about that, sir?
Well, I don't need for you to do anything about it. I wish you'd talk a little bit about it. That's all.
And what can we talk about when it comes to Obama that hasn't been talked about by other shows?
Mr. Hendry, I'm very familiar with talk radio, and you guys always get the last word, and you always make an effort to make the people that call up sound as ludicrous as possible. And I would only ask you to give me the respect of hearing me out here.
I've been listening to you.
You've been listening to me, but you're interrupting. And
all right.
And you did it again, right there. And I would just like to have, okay?
Yes.
All right. Obama is taking our country, and he is turning it into a banana republic. He's turning it into nothing more than another South American or subtropic republic with our wives, our daughters. I can't even begin to imagine what's going to happen to our wives and daughters. It's turned into... have you ever been to Jamaica? Have you seen those rum stands they have on the sides of the road?
Yes, I have.
You have?
Yes, sir.
I've seen photographs of them. I haven't been there myself. But is it his idea to turn our wives and daughters into these rum stand whores that sit there and...
Okay, I gotta interrupt you.
This is what I mean about talk radio. You don't give anyone a chance.
No, I gotta interrupt you because, first of all, you're going on and on and on and on and on and on and on.
But you're entitled to go on and on and on, huh?
Yes, sir, I am. It's my show. But I want to say this, all right?
Oh, it's your show. Well, what about the people that have... And you know, you don't give anybody a chance to say anything.
I just want to say, sir, calling Obama's turning our wives and daughters into rum stand whores.
Yes, exactly.
Do you want to explain that?
I'd be happy to if you would allow me to. And let me get a word in edgewise. I've been trying to get a word in edgewise since I called your program. But you have been going nonstop. And the moment I came on the air here, I've been trying to squeeze a word in here and squeeze a word in there, and all you are doing is interrupting me and making what I'm trying to say sound like a ludicrous bunch of nonsense. Now, I'm trying to tell you that when I was a young man, I grew up in eastern Pennsylvania. And I can recall very clearly when my sister, a very sweet and innocent young girl of 15, was taken advantage of by a friend of mine, who's an older chap who was in his early 20s, and I remember saying to him, you turned my sister into a field slut? So when you don't know what a rum stand whore is, and this guy turned my sister into a field slut...
I don't know what a field slut is, sir.
You don't know what a field slut is. Well, I feel sorry for you. I feel sorry for you.
All right. I mean, did he get her pregnant?
Yes, he got her pregnant.
Okay, sir. I understand that. The equation between...
Please don't treat me as if I'm stupid. Please don't.
No, sir. I just don't know what a field slut is.
You don't know what a field slut is. You're trying to make a monkey out of me, and I won't allow it. I won't allow it.
I don't know what that means. Was your sister a farmhand or something?
See, this is why people hate liberals. This is why they hate liberals.
You know something, sir? I don't know what you're talking about. I understand that your daughter... not your daughter.
It was my sister. If you think I'd let something like that... If you think I'd let someone turn my daughter into a field slut, I'm going to tell you, and I don't mind saying this out loud, that's one less person we've got to worry about on this planet.
The guy that turned your daughter?
Either that or my daughter. I'll kill either one of them. I will not have her going around like a field slut. I won't have her walking around with the scarlet letter of the latter half of the 20th century, FS, on her.
Okay.
Well, why did you... That man was emoting, I think, in a very lovely way.
Oh, get out of here, will you?
That guy's talking about a field slut.
He was talking about a sister that he loved very much that had been taken and ruined. My God, I wish we heard from more men who have the honor of their sisters, the honor of their little sisters at heart.
That guy was nuts. Okay?
Nuts?
Yes, nuts. That guy was loopier than, as my father used to say, he was dingier than two coats of paint.
What's that mean?
He's nuts. That cat was talking about... I first of all, I thought we were dealing with a guy that was just, you know, he doesn't like my show. Okay, I can understand that. And he wants to talk about politics. Okay, now he's starting to talk about Obama turning the country into third world banana republic. I got news for you. Anytime anybody starts going down that road, we're talking to someone who's mentally ill. I don't mind if you disagree with Obama. I get that. I understand if you think this, that. But to just cut from I don't like Obama to third world banana republic. Okay, that's number one. Then number two comes rum stand whores.
Well, that he was talking about the women that hang around the rums. You've been to the rum stands.
Yes, I've been to the rum stand. I never saw one prostitute near any of them.
Down in Jamaica?
Yes.
You ain't never seen one?
No.
Well, I've seen it. Apparently in the literature, they're prevalent.
Oh, bull crap. I've seen rum stands. I've even gone to the jerk chicken and those jerk barbecue stands.
The jerk what?
Jerk barbecue. Don't give me that funny look. And they're pleasant. I got drunk at one of those stands once, and then I went down the road and I got myself some jerk chicken and jerk sausage.
Yeah, I'll bet it was.
Get out of here. And I'm telling you, so this guy goes off on that, and then finally we get to the point of the whole conversation. His sister was turned into a field slut by some guy.
Well, I looked that up, man. That's one of the last lines in the Heat of the Night.
You're kidding.
I knew it.
Yeah.
I knew he got that from In the Heat of the Night. And then finally, the scarlet letter of the latter half of the 20th century, FS.
Well, he didn't say on the forehead.
Well, no, but I mean, for some reason, that's what I imagine. So that guy's a kookball. And let me just tell you something. You can say all you want about talk radio, news talk. I think the goofiest, weirdest, sickest, most mentally deranged people there are on the radio today are talking about politics. I think that the Obama and the politics radio that's going on, right? Conservative this, liberal that, whatever. I think they all need to be in a mental institution. Every last one of them. Because these guys get so worked up over crap they don't even believe in. Then you have the people that call in. They don't believe what they're saying. It's all just one big, it's all falderall. All right, folks, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, online at philhendryshow.com. If you were not with us earlier, let me repeat what we are going to be rolling out on Monday for new subscribers to the Phil Hendry Show website. As of Monday, we are giving away On our website, for every monthly subscription, if you buy a one-month subscription, you're going to get one free digital CD. For every six-month subscription, a semi-annual subscription, you'll get three free digital CDs. And for a new annual subscription, five free digital CDs. These are digital. They're downloads. And if you go to our shop, you can see which ones we've got. They're all of the best ofs from, I think, 1997?
Yeah, 97. Then there's one from, there's another one from Miami.
Then we also have the Miami download. And then there are the best of Bobby Dooley and the best of Ted Bell. So these are all state-of-the-art from our own personal DAT tapes, first-generation quality, and it's yours at philhendryshow.com starting on Monday and with a subscription. So that's just a little way of introducing you to what's going to be some very cool changes coming to the website. We are introducing a new design the middle of the month. We are going to be available for live streaming to Apple customers, people with iPhone and iPad. We are already available to our Apple customers for on-demand with the iPhone and the iPad. Of course, our Droid and our desktop users have been watching the live stream of our video cast, and they've been able to listen to the streaming audio as well for quite some time. So it's some exciting days ahead. Don't forget to join us on Twitter at twitter.com/RealPhilHenry and on Facebook at facebook.com/PhilHenryFans, P-H-A-N-S. And we'll be right back. And don't forget, Monday, the Lions are blacked out, but it's Ned Garline and Larry McKinney, and I believe it's the Tampa Gator Bait against the D.C. Federal Brigade in the PHFL Game of the Week, Monday at 10 a.m., So join us on Phil TV for that one. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch.
The Phil Hendry Show. Me, but you haven't. I remember when my sister was a field slut, and I didn't appreciate it, but I did.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
All right, welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. That whole rum slut thing, I don't know what that was.
Well, he was talking about a rum stand whore.
Because I was in Jamaica, and you stop at these rum stands, there's no... It's a rum stand. And, of course, that's some clown that was talking about Obama, but there's no... The only thing they have at those stands is rum and this grapefruit drink called Ping. And you can stop the car. And when I was in Jamaica, it was a long time ago. I was there probably now 16 years ago. And I was with my girlfriend's family because they were there for a family reunion. And as we traveled along this highway from Kingston to Ocho Rios, we were going, anybody that knows Jamaica are probably familiar with the coastal road that you take. It's only about 60 miles. It can't be more than 60 miles, maybe 50 miles to get from Kingston to Ocho Rios. It took us all bloody day because it's just, you know, it's a narrow two-lane road. But as we're traveling along, and of course, here I am, the white boyfriend, and I'm stopping, and they're talking to people along the way, and everybody recognized the name of their grandfather because they'd say, "Hi, we're the Barrett family. We're from the United States, and we're here for a family reunion." "Oh, really? Yeah. Do you know our grandfather? His name was Barrett." "Oh, yeah. They knew the name Teacher Barrett. That's what they called him."
Isn't that interesting? Teacher Barrett is what his name was.
That's how he was known to the people there because he was the teacher. And apparently he was a guy that was a hard-ass man. The boys had to wear their tie, and they had to have their slacks, and they had to have their shirt. But anyway, there I am getting hammered on Ping and rum.
Yeah, what? I'm sure. What a disgrace.
No, man, you didn't drunk? Well, I wasn't getting drunk. I didn't know they were going to stop and start talking to people. But I'm, yeah, how do you do? Hi, I'm Phil. And they're figuring, who's this white guy? But anyway, I'm sure it wasn't that big of a deal. If it was, then they didn't say anything about it until I was rolled later. I'm kidding.
Dude, that's racist, man.
I'm joking. So, make a long story short, then the other thing you got along the way were these jerk chicken barbecues and jerk sausage. It was fantastic, I'm telling you.
So, you didn't mind eating it?
Why would I mind?
Well, what about if you're going to get a disease or something?
They get a disease. No way. No way. It was fantastic. As a matter of fact, what I remember I bought some chicken and sausage, and it was gone, man. Within 20 miles, people were eating this. It was all gone. It was fantastic. It was delicious. I've forgotten all about jerk. That stuff is...
That's really spicy, right?
Yes, it's really spicy. They use the Scotch bonnet pepper, which is the same thing as... I believe it's the same thing as the habanero, which it's a round cherry-looking pepper that they have in Jamaica. And by God, it's hot, man. It is just a hot thang. All right, what else have we not been looking at here, man? I already talked about Rihanna. I could care less about her and her life and what's going on with her. And, you know, so she got her diamond. Good for you, Rihanna.
Yeah, you already talked about how you think that these are people that... you talked about how you think that these are... the hip-hop people are so, I guess, black that they don't get wealth.
I never said anything of the sort.
You didn't say that.
That's what I got out of it.
That's what you got out of it. Yeah, they're so black in the hip-hop world, they don't really get wealth. With barely a month left before the fiscal cliff, Republicans and Democrats remained far apart on Friday in talks to avoid the across-the-board tax hikes and spending cuts that threatened to throw the country back into recession. I just want to say one thing. And if I sound like, you know, I'm a slob, I got to tell you, conservatives are really smart about a lot of things, and they're really dead on right about a lot of things, but they are so dead on right about a lot of things, they think they're right about everything, and they're just flat not. And it's going to really steer this country right straight into a dumpster. No, I don't really think it will, but I thought I'd use some of the same apocalyptic language that is used by other people in this here spoken word format talk radio thing.
Yeah.
Now, Rick Santorum and 35 other Republican senators do not want the United States to sign off on a UN treaty on how to treat the disabled, even though the treaty is based on the Americans with Disabilities Act. It is a UN treaty among other nations that is based on our very own Americans with Disabilities Act. And even Santorum and some of the other senators have said, I know it looks bad that we are voting against this, but guess what? They're voting against it anyway on principle because Santorum and the rest of these mental midgets, and I say mental midgets not because they're Republicans, because there are other Republicans that are in favor of it. John McCain is in favor of it. There's a great many other Republicans that are in favor of it. But Santorum and this other slob, I forget his name, have put together enough Republican votes to block this treaty. And why is that, ladies and gentlemen? On principle, the UN is a bad thing, and it's all that right-wing conspiracy, one-world, Atlas Shrugged bullcrap. And the UN just on principle is a bad thing, and we shouldn't be doing it. Rick Santorum really thinks his day has arrived. Him and other Republican, really arch-conservative people think their day has arrived, and they are speaking for so many people. They have no idea that what they're actually doing is just bleeding this country. That's all they're doing. They have no idea that their stupidity is actually in direct opposition to what is healthy for this country. What is the point, sir, blocking a treaty that is based upon our very own Americans with Disabilities Act, that even you and your colleagues say it looks bad that we're blocking this thing and it isn't really a bad treaty. However, we just don't think the United States should be involved with the UN, and on principle we're going to block this treaty. What is the point? This is not a time to be standing on that kind of stupidity. Do you wonder, with a guy like that and other senators like that, do you really think we're going to get a fiscal cliff agreement between Republicans and Democrats? Santorum thinks that he has the unspoken support of the millions, the great silent majority. He thinks the conservative revolution has arrived, and he's speaking for millions. Dude, you're speaking for exactly 35 other senators. And you are speaking against something that you really know you shouldn't be speaking against. You're speaking out on some principle that has got your head so far up your own ass that you even know your head's up your ass, but at this point there's no point in pulling it out because you'd look even dumber than you do now with it up there. So you might as well just keep your head up your ass and say, you know what, I may look stupid, but I'm standing on principle, as you waddle back to your car with your head up your... I don't know.
How are you going to drive like that?
You can't even drive a car safe with your head in your ass.
Thank you.
Well, I want to applaud that. That was very good.
Thank you. Anyway, Phil Henry Show. We'll be back on Monday. Don't forget a live streaming video of our show, as well as all the archives available at philhenryshow.com. Don't forget, beginning on Monday, we are giving away free digital downloads with our subscriptions, and we'll post all of the points and the facts and the stuff for you on our website. Until Monday, let that be a lesson
to you.
Phil Henry.